Walks in, writes 7 on the board, circles it. 7. Lucky number. You know why 7 feels special? It's not magic. It's that 7 is about as many distinct things as human working memory can hold at once. Miller's famous paper, the magical number 7, plus or minus 2. We're built to process about 7 things. More than that, we start dropping items. Forgetting. And that's actually today's topic. Memory. Specifically, why most memory fails, and why that's a feature, not a bug. Sets down coffee. Oh, and you said eigen. You know what an eigenvalue is? It's the thing that doesn't change when everything else is being transformed. You apply an operation over and over, and most things get twisted around, but the eigenvector just scales. It stays itself. Memory, real, survivable memory, is like that. It's what remains stable when everything else is churning. The eigenstructure of history. But most things that try to be memories don't make it. They're not eigen enough. Let's talk about why. Leans on the podium. First, let me correct a misconception. When most people think of memory, they think of recall. Looking backward. I remember what happened. Like a video you can replay. That's not what matters here. For our purposes, a system has memory if past states constrain future behavior. If traces of what happened persist long enough to affect what happens next. If eliminated failures become less likely to recur. Memory is not about the past. Memory is about the future. It's forward acting. It biases what comes next. A system with memory doesn't just exist in the present, it carries the past forward as a constraint on possibility. Starts pacing. Now here's something counterintuitive. Most memory is unstable. Most memory destroys the system that holds it. Imagine a system that records everything. Every fluctuation. Every transient state. Every random noise spike. Every tiny variation. What happens? It drowns. Too much memory amplifies noise. You're not just remembering the important patterns, you're remembering the static. The random garbage. And you can't tell which is which. Too much memory increases coupling. Everything is connected to everything else through the web of recorded relationships. Change one thing, and ripples propagate everywhere. Too much memory slows response. Before you can act, you have to consult this massive archive of everything that ever happened. By the time you've processed it all, the situation has changed. Too much memory creates contradictory constraints. This worked before, and this also worked before, and this also worked before, but they can't all work now, because now is different. Stops, faces the class. Here's the brutal truth. Most memory kills its host. Systems that try to remember too much become rigid, slow, contradictory, and fragile. They collapse under the weight of their own history. What survives? Memory that improves survivability. Memory that pays for itself. Everything else is eliminated. This is the filter operating on memory itself. Not all information that could be retained is retained. Only information that helps. Sit on the desk. So what does survivable memory look like? It's compressed. Good memory doesn't preserve events. It preserves lessons. Think about how you remember things. You don't have a video recording of every conversation you've ever had. You have impressions. Patterns. Generalizations. That type of situation usually goes badly. This kind of approach tends to work. Watch out for people who do that thing. You've compressed thousands of experiences into heuristics. Rules of thumb. Biases. That compression isn't a limitation of your memory. It's the whole point. A memory system that said on Tuesday, March 3, 2019, at 2:47 p.m., this specific thing happened in this specific way would be useless. You'd never encounter that exact situation again. but a memory system that says situations with these features tend to produce these outcomes, that transfers. That generalizes. That's useful. Compression isn't a choice. It's enforced by constraint. Memory that can't compress can't survive. Stands up, walks to the window. Here's something that might shift how you think about this. Memory doesn't require a dedicated store. We tend to think of memory as something separate. A filing cabinet. A hard drive. A specific region of the brain where memories live. But memory can be anywhere. It can be in altered thresholds. A system that's been stressed responds differently to future stress, not because it remembers in a cognitive sense, but because its response thresholds have shifted. It can be in changed pathways. Connections that got reinforced are easier to activate. Connections that were never used have weakened or disappeared. It can be in structure itself. A bone that healed is shaped by the break. A tree that grew around an obstacle carries the obstacle's shape forever. A system remembers whenever its dynamics are biased by prior elimination. Whenever what happened before affects what can happen next. This makes memory ubiquitous. And invisible. You can't always see where the memory lives. It's distributed throughout the system. Embedded in the architecture. Turns back. Now, here's something profound. Once memory exists, symmetry breaks. Think about a system with no memory. It treats all possible futures equally. Any path is as likely as any other. The landscape of possibility is flat. Add memory, and the landscape tilts. Some paths become harder to take. The memory says that didn't work and suppresses them. Some states become easier to reach. The memory says this worked and facilitates them. Some transitions are blocked entirely. The system no longer sees an open field of possibility. It sees a shaped landscape, carved by history. And this is irreversible. You can't UN-shape the landscape. You can't restore the symmetry. The compression that created the memory threw away the information you'd need to undo it. Memory makes the future narrower than the past. Paces slowly. Now here's the part that really matters. Forgetting is not a failure. Forgetting is a feature. Memory that cannot be forgotten accumulates contradictions. Think about it. The world changes. What worked before stops working. What was dangerous becomes safe. What was safe becomes dangerous. If you can't forget, you're stuck with obsolete constraints. Avoid that predator, but the predator has been extinct for 1,000 years. Seek that food source, but it doesn't grow here anymore. Memory that can't update becomes a prison. So survivable systems forget aggressively. They retain only what continues to reduce failure. They let go of everything else. Forgetting frees degrees of freedom. It removes obsolete constraints. It prevents deadlock. Forgetting is elimination applied inward. The same filter that shapes what can exist in the universe shapes what can persist in memory. Memories that don't help are eliminated, just like structures that don't persist are eliminated. Sits back down. But here's the tension. Memory alone isn't enough. Because memory can become wrong. A static memory, one that never updates, will eventually be out of sync with reality. The world changes. The memory doesn't. The gap widens until the system makes a catastrophic error based on outdated information. So survivable memory has to be paired with correction mechanisms. Update rules. Decay processes. Memory has to be able to change. To revise. To let go of what's no longer true and incorporate what's newly learned. But wait, if memory can change too easily, it's not stable. If it changes too slowly, it's obsolete. This is another balance point. Another narrow ridge that systems have to walk. Memory must be stable enough to persist, flexible enough to update, aggressive enough to forget, and conservative enough to retain. Get any of those wrong, and you're dead. Leans forward, energized. At some point, something remarkable happens. Memory stops being incidental. It becomes architectural. Early on, memory is a side effect. Structures get shaped by their history, but they're not organized around memory. They just happen to carry traces of the past. But as complexity increases, dedicated structures emerge whose primary role is to preserve memory. To protect it from noise. To update it safely. To maintain it against degradation. The system starts investing in memory as a thing in itself. Not just a byproduct, but a priority. At this point, the system isn't just stable. It's historical. It's organized around its own past. Its architecture serves the continuity of information across time. This is a threshold. Systems that cross it are fundamentally different from systems that don't. Pauses. I want to be careful about something. Nothing I've said implies intention. Memory doesn't exist because systems want to remember. It exists because systems without it fail faster. The purposeful appearance is misleading. Memory narrows behavior, which makes systems look like they're pursuing goals. But the causation runs the other way. Systems that don't narrow their behavior, that don't constrain themselves based on history, don't persist. We're not observing intention. We're observing the shape that survival carves. Stands up. All right. We're now at a threshold. Everything we've talked about, memory shaping individual systems, biasing their future behavior, reducing repeated failure, that's all been about single systems persisting through time. But memory can do something more disruptive. It can copy itself. Not just persist in one system. But replicate. Spread. Multiply. When memory starts copying, a new eliminative regime kicks in. The filter operates not just on individual survival, but on lineages. On patterns that propagate. That's replication. That's where life comes from. And that's next week. Gathers notes. The closing line from your reading. Memory survives not because the past matters, but because repeating failure is expensive. That's it. That's the whole thing. We don't remember because the past is sacred. We remember because forgetting the lessons means paying the price again. And again. And again. Memory is the scar tissue of elimination. The residue of everything that didn't work, compressed into a bias that says not that way. And somehow, out of all that scar tissue, out of all that compressed failure, structure emerges that can navigate a changing world. Heads for the door. 7. Lucky number. Maybe it's lucky because it's the eigenvalue of human cognition. The stable point around which our memory organizes. Any more and we'd be overwhelmed. Any less and we couldn't function. 7 items in working memory. Just enough to survive. See you next week.